Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. It is September the 2nd, hard to believe, 2016, the beginning of the Labor Day weekend, where we commemorate the efforts of all hardworking Americans, something that most of our politicians in Washington from both parties seem to routinely forget about. Happy to join you. Happy you're here joining me. Anyway, today we're going to be discussing a bunch of stuff, starting off with Donald Trump, his visit to Mexico, his amazing speech, and I thought he did a really good job. I was listening with trepidation, but we'll get into why I thought what he said was spot on. A couple points that I wish he had addressed that he didn't, but we can deal with those. We're going to be talking a little bit about an article that I wrote for Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. You know, I do a lot of writing for Front Page Magazine and The Social Contract, but I do write for Californians for Population Stabilization, proud to have been affiliated with them for so many years. And so we will talk about my article, and the title of it is kind of self-explanatory, Globalism and the Death of the American Dream. We live in a truly wacky world today, don't we? So that will be a part of the discussion. But first, I want to remind all of you, especially if you're new to my program, that I'm a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. My 30 years with that agency, spending half of that time with the Drug Task Force, being involved in the arrest of terrorists, testifying before Congress, working with state legislative bodies, has given me a perspective on the immigration issue that not too many people have. I've kind of taken the scenic tour, if you will. And immigration, rather than this single issue that it's always portrayed as being by the mainstream media and most of the pollsters, is really a multifaceted issue. It's a singular issue that impacts nearly every challenge and every threat that America and Americans face today. It's remarkable that the mainstream media, for the most part, refuses to be honest about immigration, along with a bunch of other things. So that's the purpose of my program. I've been doing this ever since 9/11, not specifically this program, but other programs, media appearances, writing for various websites, to try to wake up our fellow Americans, try to wake up our supposed political leaders, to make them understand that if we can't secure our borders, if we can't control who comes into the United States, our country is finished. It's as simple as that. And this isn't about xenophobia. Every race, every religion, every ethnicity has the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's not about keeping people out because anything other than whether or not they pose a threat to our safety or our well-being or would likely take the jobs that Americans desperately need. That's why we have immigration laws. This is no different from the homeowner who locks his door at night and carefully looks through the peephole when a stranger knocks on the door. Under the Obama administration, there is no door. And to be blunt, prior administrations weren't nearly as bad as the current administration, but you'd have to go back decades, to find any administration that really understood the true significance of securing America's borders and preventing the entry of people who would hurt us. The 9/11 hijackers all entered the United States through ports of entry. The Boston Marathon bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers, entered the United States with their family through ports of entry. We even naturalized them. They got political asylum. They lied through their teeth, and we gave them political asylum. Time and again, we've seen terrorists and criminals enter the United States, and we've seen Congress do everything in their power to make certain that immigration was never the topic of discussion, even though it was the failures of the immigration system that enabled the terrorists to get into our country, enabled the criminals to get into our country, and enable the massive quantities of narcotics to flow across our borders, and not just across the Mexican border. Bad as that border is, much as we absolutely must secure that border, drugs are coming in through seaports, through international airports, across the Canadian border. We are truly a nation of 50 border states. So that's the purpose for this program, is to try to provide you with the information the mainstream media is not providing, and to do it in a way where hopefully my personal experiences can help to shed a light on these problems, these challenges that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And additionally, I want to remind you about some websites. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Californians for Population Stabilization, their terrific website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And I recommend you check in with them on a daily basis, because every day they have new commentaries, new articles, new information. If we're going to win the battles against the politicians, we need to educate ourselves. These guys are con artists. They know how to say the things that they think you want to hear, but when you read between the lines, you realize that you're not getting what they're promising you. They really have mastered the art of bait and switch. And again, the antidote to this nonsense is education. And where immigration is concerned, this is the place to go. This is where we take the blinders off and get to see up close and in person what's really going on. Same thing with Front Page Magazine. Same thing with The Social Contract. In fact, The Social Contract is a quarterly publication. They will be issuing the fall edition shortly, and the magazine itself will primarily, as I understand it, be dealing with how automation is taking lots of jobs away. If you ever watch How It's Made or those other great science programs, one of the reasons that I actually have cable TV isn't to watch the junk on television, but I love the documentaries in the History Channel and the Science Channel. And when you look at how it's made and you look at how cars are manufactured and you compare the manufacturing process to the old Model T Ford, where these burly guys in grease-spattered coveralls would move the car that they were building from one workstation to the next, and today you don't see anything like that. It's almost done in surgical cleanliness. It looks like they're building a spaceship, not as though they're building a car. Robots do the welding. Robots form the metals, and they move the finished the car as it's being worked from station to station. And very few people, relatively few people, are involved in the process. And increasingly more and more people are being pulled off that production line to be replaced by robots. So they're going to be looking at the impact of automation and computerization on labor. But being the immigration guy that I am, I couldn't resist, couldn't help myself. So my topic, and they've agreed to include it, my topic for the publication is about immigration fraud. And what I called my article, unless the editor changes it, but they usually don't, is Immigration Fraud, the Lies That Kill. And the point that I was making is the same point the 9/11 Commission made. And, you know, I provided testimony to the commission. They found that immigration fraud and visa fraud were key in the ability of the terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves in the United States. The term I like to use is hide in plain sight. They used fake ID. They lied about the need for political asylum, claiming credible fear when they had no fear. I mean, consider the Tsarnaev brothers. This is certainly well after the 9/11 attacks and the 9/11 Commission report. But that family claimed political asylum, meaning we can't go home. We have a credible fear that if we go back to our home country, at the least we're going to face persecution and, God knows, perhaps lots worse. And as soon as we gave them lawful status, they hopped on airplanes and voluntarily went back to Russia, their home country. You have to be brain dead to figure this one out. They lied. They committed fraud. Fraud is a lie put on paper to entitle somebody to something that they wouldn't be entitled to get if the truth and all the relevant facts were known. That's what fraud is. So they lied. They ultimately got lawful status. One of these two brothers got citizenship. The other one had applied for citizenship. And if they had not been able to stay here, there would have been no attack at the Boston Marathon back on April 15th, 2013. Same thing with the 9/11 attacks. Same thing with the attack at the CIA back in January of 93 by a Pakistani by the name of Kansi. Same way the terror attack, the terror bombing of the World Trade Center February of 93 was concerned. All of the perpetrators of those attacks were foreign nationals from the Middle East who lied about their identities, lied about political asylum, got amnesty by committing fraud, gamed the immigration system. And that's why this whole immigration system really needs to have integrity. And that's what we're trying to push for, what I'm trying to push for. And so now, having said that, let's consider Donald Trump and Donald Trump's speech. And I find it astonishing. I'm beyond words here that in the wake of his speech, where he outlined a 10-point program, and yes, the fence or wall on the border was a big part of it, and therein was my concern, is he only going to talk about the wall? Because that's what we've seen from the politicians in Washington. The first Secure the Border Act. And, you know, when I do speaking engagements around the country, people say to me, well, shouldn't we at least put up a fence on the border first? And my question is, first and then what? You see, this notion that if we sealed off the Mexican border, illegal immigration would stop is crazy. It's lunatic. It's lunacy. I get the words out. I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine a couple of years ago. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. We're being told that if we partially plug, and believe me, they don't even want to plug the holes. They want to create the illusion, just like the virtual fence. We all heard about the virtual fence, right? I was on with Lou Dobbs many years ago when he was over at CNN. He said, Mike Cutler, what do you think about the virtual fence? I said, Lou, it'll do exactly what it's supposed to do. Cost a ton of money and stop virtually nobody, the virtual fence. So they create the illusions, they spend lots of money and make certain that nothing changes because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and a host of other organizations, special interest groups, and contributors want open borders. So the challenge for the politicians, irrespective of whether they're Democrats or Republicans, is to make certain that no matter what happens, aliens can flood into the country, and everything continues on the same way. This isn't an accident. These people aren't, for the most part, that stupid. I mean, some of them are pretty stupid. You know, we used to tell ethnic humor, you know, the joke about, and I won't say it because I think it's terrible, but, the, you know, the idiots, how many idiots does it take to screw in a light bulb? You fill in the ethnic group. Why don't we change that and talk about how many members of Congress it would take to screw in a light bulb, you know? Maybe that's a better way of doing it, and you could be politically correct all at the same time. But believe me, they understand exactly what they're doing because politicians figure that in order to win elections, they've got to get the broadest base of voters to vote for them, people who might not agree with each other. So the politician who wins the election has to try to appear to be, all things to all people. That does not work. So they play games, and they lie through their teeth, and they try to convince you that they're giving you what you ask for, but they're not. But they're not. And that's what you've been seeing with immigration. Once we secure the Mexican border, then we can deal with the 11 million who are here, because we can't deport 11 million people. I've had arguments with leaders in the Congress in private meetings, and they must think I'm stupid or something. Because they will look me in the eye and say, well, Mr. Cutler, we can't deport 11 million. But if anyone comes to America after that cutoff date that we're going to establish, we're not letting them stay. Well, wait a minute. You're going to know when they came here, if they run the border? Even if this is a good idea, and it's not, how do you know how long an illegal alien has been in the country if there's no capability of doing any interviews, let alone a field investigation? All that the aliens are going to have to do is answer the questions the right way. Now, what is the right way? They're going to write down, oh, okay, I have to say that I came to America no later than January of 2014, whatever the magic date is. So everyone will have entered the United States no later than 2013. Who's going to verify it? Nobody. So does it matter? No. This is the kind of stupidity. And then you watch the talking heads on TV. And they go along with the program, right? Well, if these people have been living in the United States for at least 5 years, wait a minute. How are you going to know how long they've been living here? And what about sleeper agents? Think about how many Nazi war criminals for decades were being dug out of the woodwork by the Nazi hunters. I helped them with one particular case. I was very proud of it. It was a wonderful thing to be able to help them with one case. I wish I could have helped them with all the cases. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I was named for my mother's mother, my grandmother, Malka, who was killed in Poland during the war because we're Jewish. So, you know, the Nazis were able to hide themselves in our country by lying. That's not justice. That's not what America is supposed to be about. And now we're talking about the potential for giving 20, 30, 40 million. Nobody knows what the number is. And it won't matter if the number is 10 million now or 11 million or 15 million, because if we do this program, you're going to have aliens charging that border and buying fake documentation and lying about when they came here, and nobody will know different. The Reagan administration told us 1 million aliens would take part in the amnesty of 86. We wound up with almost 4 million. They probably undercounted, and you probably had lots more who came in well after the date and lied and got away with it. Just saying you have to have been here more than X number of years doesn't mean anything if you can't substantiate it. And when aliens evade the inspections process at ports of entry, they do not create a record of their entry. So they could claim to be here as long as they want to, and without the ability to investigate millions of applications. And believe me, we can't investigate millions. We have a problem with hundreds of thousands. The Dreamers, for example, aren't being interviewed and they're not being investigated. Hundreds of thousands. Basically, comprehensive immigration reform, if it's enacted, would be a free-for-all. It would be an absolute bloody free-for-all. And the point that I've mentioned before, but I'm going to mention it again, is that every alien who gets lawful status would immediately have the absolute authority, without question, to bring in all of their minor children and all of their spouses. You could wind up with more kids coming here after the fact than the number of aliens who would get lawful status. Think about it. In third world countries, many families have huge numbers of children, 5, 6, 7, 8, not unusual. Not unusual. Or you have some guy who's been messing around here, there, and everywhere, and he has 10 kids with 3 different women. He's going to be bringing them here. And he will have every right to do so if we enact comprehensive immigration reform. How in the world would the United States of America deal with an influx? And I'm going to be a wild-eyed optimist of 10 million kids who can't speak English, who would suddenly be flown to America literally overnight, and wind up in crowded schools throughout America that are having a tough time teaching American kids right now. Now, Hillary Clinton knows this. Tim Kaine knows this. So with all this talk, oh, we're going to lift you up. We're going to give you a free college education. We're going to give you and give you and give you. We are looking potentially at the influx of millions of children overnight. And the Congressional Budget Office did a study that said that it costs 20 to 40% more per child to educate that child if he or she is not fluent in the English language. Can you imagine the nightmare this would create? Could you imagine the chaos this would create? Can you imagine the congestion, the impact on schools, the impact on the environment? Can you imagine the impact on infrastructure? Think of all those kids getting on school buses and trains. I mean, just imagine what this would do to America, a massive influx. And I'm not being a nativist, and I don't care what country they would come from. We can't absorb that number of children or that number of workers. We now have 95 million Americans who've left the labor force. When there's a hole in the bottom of the boat, the solution is not to drill more holes and claim that the water is magically going to disappear out of those additional holes. If you drill more holes in the bottom of your boat, it's going to wind up at the bottom of the lake that much sooner. As long as you can fog a mirror, If you have anything other than a flat line EEG, you know this is true. And yet, for whatever reason, we know the reason, the politicians have been bribed. They've been given campaign contributions by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others. And this is why the news media won't bring immigration agents on to talk about immigration. Did you ever notice this? At the risk of sounding like the late Andy Rooney, who always used to start out saying, did you ever notice? Did you ever notice? And I don't care what channel it is. I don't care what network. With the exception of One American News Network, Newsmax, and Glenn Beck's programs. I was just on with Dana Lash a couple of days ago. The mainstream media does not have immigration officers to come on to talk about immigration. It's the only place where you're not going to find any former immigration employee. Watch the news. If there's a story about the Juno satellite that is now orbiting Jupiter, the networks bring in scientists and astronauts and astronomers and engineers, and they talk about this stuff in great detail, and I'm fascinated. My original dream was to be an aerospace engineer. Growing up, my heroes were astronauts, not baseball players. I had the privilege of meeting some of the astronauts, and they are truly extraordinary human beings, great Americans. But understand the problem that we have. Understand the problem that we have. You are not going to see an immigration agent come on, but you will see an astronomer come on. When the discussion is about the military, they bring in former generals. They'll bring in commandos. They'll bring in colonels. They bring in Army Rangers, Navy SEALs. The military story. If there's a story about a homicide, they will bring in a detective, a retired police detective. If it's about a kidnapping, maybe they'll bring in either a detective or an FBI profiler. If it's about cancer, they bring in doctors, oncologists, and biochemists. But as soon as the topic turns to immigration, who comes on the program? If you're lucky, you might get an analyst who works for a think tank, and they don't understand the immigration issue the way agents or immigration employees do. But more likely than not, they might bring on a border sheriff, which goes back to this lie that this is all about the Mexican border. But most likely, they're going to bring on political consultants, pollsters, maybe even radio talk show hosts. Why is it that they don't bring in former agents? You know, in the days and weeks and months, and for a couple of years after 9/11, I was averaging 15 television interviews per month. 15. Now, maybe they're tired of me. I don't have to do TV. It's a pain in the neck. It's a lot easier, by the way, when I do these other shows these days to do Skype. I can just sit in my living room, and I do a quick interview, and it saves you from having to kill half a day of going into the city. But if they would want me, I would do it. There are others who would do it. Bring immigration agents on. Because they don't want the American people to understand the true nature of this beast. Most of the television networks have multiple language subsidiaries, so their revenue depends on having lots of foreign language viewers so they could charge more for airtime. There's all kinds of business considerations. And so when Donald Trump came out and was very clear and said, we need to make certain that the immigration laws are enforced to put American workers first, you would think, well, that's a common sense statement. Who else would a country put first but their own citizens? And that's what Donald Trump very clearly articulated. We're going to make certain that if you're a criminal, if you're a gang member, you're out of here. He brought on the angel moms, these people who lost their children to aliens who had no right to be in the country. And it breaks your heart. My good friend Don Rosenberg lost his 25-year-old son to an illegal alien who shouldn't have been here. The guy had his car taken from him because he was caught driving, I believe it was the wrong way at a one-way street, but he was an illegal alien without a license. And, of course, in San Francisco, if you're an illegal alien, you're golden. Now, if you were an American, that would be a whole other story. But this guy's an illegal alien. Hell, he needs his car to go to work. Never mind that he shouldn't be working. And so he runs Don's son over multiple times in trying to flee and doesn't even get charged with a felony. This is the madness of America. And Don had met with Donald Trump at the beginning of Trump's campaign. These other women had equally horrifying stories. I testified at the murder trial of a piece of garbage who I had physically deported. A guy was from Panama, Ronaldo Rayside, drug dealer who had been convicted of narcotics trafficking, lost his green card because of his criminal convictions. But because of the sanctuary policies of New York City going back to the 80s, the NYPD didn't even notify immigration that they had this guy in custody, not once but twice. And reentry after deportation is a felony under federal law. And I liked Ed Koch. He was the mayor at the time, but it didn't matter. They did not notify us. And the third time he's encountered by a cop, it's a 25-year-old police officer, Robert Machotti. His wife is pregnant. And he dies on a street corner in Brooklyn. I testified at the murder trial. I was on the witness stand for close to a full day. It was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. These are real stories. These aren't victimless crimes. So Trump stands there and says, we need to stop this. We need to stop this. And now it's being described as something that's radical. It's radical to stop this carnage. Americans and other people in our country losing their lives, being assaulted, being raped, being robbed, being mugged by people who shouldn't be here. We have an administration that cuts loose hundreds, or at least 100,000 criminals, the number may be as high as 200,000 criminal aliens who have then gone on to commit more homicides. This is sheer madness. And when Donald Trump spoke out about it, the next day the mainstream media was talking about how radical his approach was, how he was pandering to the extreme right wing. Full disclosure, folks, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent, but this isn't a left-right issue. Wanting to keep American citizens alive in their own country is a conservative issue? Really? This is insane. Drugs are pouring into America. Kids are getting hooked on narcotics. In New York City, school nurses, public school nurses, folks, are being given the antidote to heroin overdoses, Narcan. That's a left-right issue? You have to be a right-wing nutcase to want to keep heroin out of our country? No one challenges these people on these crazy statements. That's what we're talking about. No one's saying, don't let people into America. We're saying, let's be careful we don't let people in who hurt us. We look through that peephole before we admit strangers into our homes, don't we? So why in the world is this so radical? We have a caller, apparently. Let me just see who's on the line. Hi, you're talking to Mike Cutler. Who is this?
Hey, Mike. This is Ed. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Ed. I'm glad you called. How are you this evening?
All right. What did you think of Trump's visit to Mexico and his speech afterwards?
Well, I was just talking about the speech that he gave, and he made sense. And you know, what's so amazing, Ed, is you have people in the mainstream media talking about how radical he was pandering to the extreme right because he said, let's put American workers first. Let's protect American lives. Let's look out for America's national security. And when you hear nonsense like that, it leaves you shaking your head. You know, our borders are our first and last line of defense against transnational criminals, against spies, against terrorists, against fugitives from justice. And so when you have the guy who wants to be the next president saying, I want to be president so I could look out for Americans, and you have journalists, so-called, saying, oh, this guy, man, he was pandering to that extreme right-wing element. How in the world is it right-wing to say, let's protect America against criminals and terrorists? Let's protect Americans who are losing their jobs to foreign workers who shouldn't be here. And the idea that he went to Mexico was wonderful because I think it was important. We're not going to make Mexico go away by closing our eyes, and they are an important partner for the United States. They are part of North America. But I think that Trump sent a clear message that his primary mission is to look out for America and Americans. He's not the globalist that the Republicans and Democrats have become. What were your thoughts, Ed?
Well, I think, you know, we definitely got to do something about the borders. I mean, Article 4, mm-hmm. Section 4 of the Constitution says that one of the main duties of the federal government is to protect the states and its people from invasion, from criminal invasion. I mean, nobody's and Republicans or the Democrats aren't doing it. And it just keeps happening.
That's why you've seen the Republicans going crazy over Donald Trump, because most of the Republicans are globalists.
Yeah.
Think about it. What they want is cheap labor. The Chamber of Commerce wants three things. They want an unlimited supply of cheap labor. They want an unlimited supply of foreign tourists and an unlimited supply of foreign students. We right now have almost 500,000 foreign students in the United States studying the STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math. China sends us more foreign students than any other country, high-tech students. China does not exactly have a great relationship with us, and we don't have a very good relationship with them, especially under the chaos of Obama. It's almost devolving into a Cold War. They've built an artificial island in the South China Sea. They've warned America, keep your airplanes away from that island or else. China is involved with hacking our computers as a matter of routine. China is also helping other countries that we don't agree with. So you look at the situation we have with China. The madness is, how many American companies have built factories in China? China has no respect for intellectual property rights. They ignore patent law. They ignore copyright law. They openly spy. Lots of their workers come to America, spy on us by putting their people into the military contractors' offices. And what's interesting, and most people don't know this, if you have people working for a company that makes devices for the military, if that device ultimately is considered top secret but is not considered top secret when the spy is caught working for the company, generally it's treated not as a matter of a national security crisis, but simply as, you know, industrial espionage. And so usually these people don't even go to jail. If they do, it's for a very short jail sentence, and then we deport them. Whereas if they waited for that particular bit of technology to wind up on one of our fighter planes or nuclear submarines, you could wind up going to jail for life. So they very wisely, the Chinese very wisely, put their people into jobs in the United States where they work for military contractors, where they're able to steal the secrets. And very often the people that they will use are naturalized American citizens. Now, that's not to say that everyone who's naturalized is a spy. My own mother, may she rest in peace, was naturalized, and she could not have been more loyal to this country. But the naturalization process right now has no integrity. And in fact, going back to the Clinton administration, Doris Meisner, who used to be the commissioner of the Immigration Service, decided that because her goal was to naturalize as many people as possible, that the interviews were taking up too much time. Believe it or not, she found a way to have them change the process so that face-to-face interviews were no longer a part of the naturalization process for many of those applications. The lunacy is that we're giving United States citizenship to foreign nationals without being able to determine if they possess even good moral character. And by the way, good moral character is a requirement under the Immigration and Nationality Act. So if you're pushing applications through at warp speed, kind of like Lucy at the old bonbon factory, you don't know who you're giving citizenship to. You know nothing about their backgrounds. You know nothing about who they are affiliated with. You wind up undermining your national security. And when I listen to Donald Trump talking about hiring more agents to deport people who are here illegally, I agree with him. Now, the one argument that the other people use, and this is, again, one of those straw man arguments, we can't deport 11 million people. And every time I hear it, I turn purple. And the reason I turn purple is because no law gets enforced 100% of the time. Think about how few people get caught speeding. And yet you'll never hear a police commissioner say, well, if we can't stop all the speeders, let's not stop any of the speeders. People do get away defrauding the IRS, but a lot of them get caught. So what the IRS tries to do is to convince as many people as possible that if you try to do something illegal on your tax return, they're going to find it, and you're going to pay a heavy price for it, perhaps wind up going to jail. And in fact, before tax day, what do you normally see the IRS do? Round up a bunch of Americans and charge them with tax fraud. Now, why are they doing that? To deter people, to say to the American people, you see these folks in handcuffs? This could be you. Don't even think about it. But you have both political parties today, the Democrats and the Republicans, whether it's Harry Reid or Paul Ryan, and what are they saying? Oh, well, we can't deport 11 million. So now the argument is, do we only give them permission to work, only in parentheses or quotes, or do we make them citizens? Well, of course, the Democrats want to make them citizens, not because they're compassionate, but because they expect they'll vote for them. The Republicans don't want them to get citizenship because they don't want them to vote for the Democrats, but they want to be able to get the cheap labor for the people that are giving them campaign contributions. And by the way, the Democrats are getting as many campaign contributions as the Republicans on this issue. In fact, here's something that I bet you don't know, Ed, and I bet that the folks out there don't know. Hillary Clinton, who's always talking about Wall Street and Donald Trump with his millions of dollars, as though she's living a life of poverty herself with her $100 million or whatever it is that she's been managed to get her hands on. But the Clinton Foundation has partnered with the Gates Foundation. Now, this is the interesting thing. Gates has been the biggest force behind the expansion of the H-1B visa program. And yet, the Clinton Foundation has partnered with the Gates Foundation in Africa, supposedly to look out for the best interests of girls and women around the world, and in particular in Africa. Meanwhile, they're ignoring girls and women in the United States, and they're certainly ignoring boys and men in the United States. This global push, kind of remarkable. And it turns out now Elon Musk's rocket that blew up 2 days ago at Cape Canaveral was supposed to launch an Israeli satellite, but it was for Facebook, for Zuckerberg, and there was a report this morning that said that the purpose of the satellite was to provide Facebook opportunities in Africa. The big focus is Africa. And this is about exploiting people and resources. This is about a push for more wealth, more power by Silicon Valley, whether it's Zuckerberg, whether it's Gates. All of those corporations are in a feeding frenzy, irrespective of the damage they might be doing to America or Americans. And along comes Donald Trump and says, wait a minute. We have no right to bring in foreign workers when you have 95 million Americans who are unemployed. You have no right to bring in high-tech workers when we're firing all the American computer programmers and bringing in people from India to replace them. Now, the globalists have got to be looking at Donald Trump and have to be losing their mind, because what they're out to do is to destroy the middle class of the United States. April 30th, 2009, Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer, and it was a hearing on comprehensive immigration reform. And Greenspan referred to American high-tech workers as the privileged elite, earning a wage premium because these workers, these Americans, were being shielded from foreign competition. And he said, we need to get rid of that shield, because if we got rid of the shield, we could get rid of the wage premium being paid to those American workers. Wage premium is another word for the salaries. And he said if we got rid of a big part of that wage premium, we would greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills or those with lesser skills. So really, what Greenspan is calling for, with the tacit approval of Chuck Schumer and the rest of the eight gangsters, as I call them, from both sides of the aisle, they want to flood America with high-tech workers from overseas to drive down the wages of American programmers, engineers, and scientists. Why do they want to do it? Because they want to lower the cost of labor so they can increase profits. Here's the long-term problem, however. They are destroying the consumer base that these companies are ultimately depending upon, the people that would normally buy their products, their services, and so forth. Take money out of the consumer, and they can't buy whatever it is you're selling. Henry Ford understood this. Henry Ford did something that everyone else made them think that he was crazy. He was paying his workers more than anybody else, the guys that worked on the assembly line to build the Model T Ford. And everyone said, oh, this isn't sustainable. Why are you paying them so much money? And Ford said, I have two reasons. Number one, people who are well paid are going to be loyal to you and they're going to work hard. Number two, I need to pay those people enough money that they can then go out and buy the same cars they are working on. If they can't afford the cars they're building, no one's going to buy the cars and I'm going to go bankrupt. But if I can pay these people enough money that they're then in the position to buy a new car, then they buy the cars, I keep them happy, and they keep me happy, and everything will keep on running smoothly. And that's exactly how the middle class was born in America. Middle class wages went up, buying power went up, the typical American family owned a home and had a two-car garage with two cars in the garage. That helped Detroit's wheels literally and figuratively to turn. Now, where are we? We've destroyed the middle class. Wages are going down every year. In fact, when they advertise cars, very often you don't even know what the car costs. They talk about leasing. Why do they talk about leasing? Because fewer and fewer and fewer Americans are in the position to actually buy an automobile. That's a clear indicator that the economy is failing. And you have these economists, so-called, on television, and what do they talk about? Oh, the economy should be doing better. Unemployment is at 5%. These are all lies. Unemployment is at 5% if you ignore 95 million Americans of working age who aren't working. 5% is more than a sick joke. It's a betrayal. This is Orwellian. It's a lie. It's the kind of garbage that you used to hear in Russia from Izvestia and Pravda, the news services, back when there was the Soviet Union. And everybody would laugh and say, well, the Russians, ha-ha, their governments lie to them. But we're Americans. We get the truth from our government. We're not getting the truth from our government. We're not getting the truth from the news media. Anybody who can get on a TV studio and talk about a 5% unemployment rate with a straight face is a damn liar. And if you look at the unemployment rates in the black and Latino and minority communities, those numbers are off the chart. The numbers are off the chart. And when you see the rioting in Baltimore and St. Louis, you're seeing kids that are living in poverty, kids who are frustrated, who have no legitimate way of making an honest dollar, who have bleak futures if things don't change. And it's easy to manipulate people who live in poverty. It's easy to manipulate people who are desperate. A 17, 18, 19-year-old kid living in the inner city is desperate. There are no opportunities, and most of those kids get involved with crime as a way of picking up a couple of bucks so they can go out on a date with that girl they find attractive. And when they look at their role model, it isn't some hardworking guy or some hardworking gal. They're looking at somebody who's driving around in a brand-new car with lots of jewelry and a good-looking woman hanging off of his arm, and he's either a drug dealer or a car thief or somebody else involved in criminal activity. Because when jobs go away, people still need to get their hands on money. And if you stymie legitimate efforts to get their hands on the money, then people will find different ways of doing it. And that's why poverty and crime go hand in hand. And in fact, there was an article published a couple of years ago how poverty is the equivalent or the impact of lowering children's IQs, I believe it was by 13 points. Why? Because poverty creates stress. As an agent, I walked into buildings where rats ran through the hallways, and these rats were as big as a cat, where the stench of rotting food was there, urine in the hallways, so many insects infesting the apartment that if you walked into an apartment and flipped on the light switch, you'd see the wall covered with insects, and the insects were on the move. We used to jokingly call it the moving wall. It was a gallows kind of humor because it was hard to deal with the realities that we confronted walking into some of those terrible buildings where these children were living. No heat in the wintertime, no air conditioning in the summertime. These are angry, scared kids without much in the way of a future. And because they're skirting the law very often, when they see a cop coming, they don't see a friend, they see an adversary. So they get nervous, the cop gets nervous, we have terrible incidents happening on the street, and the great majority of police and federal agents are dedicated professionals who've taken that job for all the right reasons. And yet you have an administration that castigates police, teaches these kids that the police are the enemy. What do you think is happening? What's happening is it's now fashionable because of the nonsense being spewed by this Obama administration and by Hillary Clinton to speak out against police, to speak out against the very part of our government that's supposed to keep our citizens safe. And yet Hillary Clinton comes out and talks about Donald Trump. Oh, he's telling us to be afraid. Well, Hillary Clinton, aren't you telling us to be afraid? But you don't have the guts to confront reporters because you haven't had a news conference in nearly 300 days. Imagine a woman running for the presidency, or a man, this isn't about man or woman, anybody running for any office, not holding news conferences, playing the game of duck and dodge and weave and duck and cover. I'm not going to talk to you. You're going to ask me a question. I can't give you an answer. We're living in a very perilous era. And the idea that Donald Trump stood up and said what he said was refreshing. Now, look, everyone, we have problems with Trump. But he's a character. But, you know, every time we vote for somebody, one thing that does happen, and we have to be realistic, we don't agree with anybody 100% of the time. I don't even agree with me 100% of the time. When I look back at positions I've taken on issues in the past, I might find that my understanding of issues has changed and evolved. We try to learn new things every day. So as you learn, you change your perspective. But when you look at the difference, frankly, between Trump and Hillary Clinton, it's shocking. Clinton comes out there and says, we're going to legalize tens of millions of illegal aliens. We're going to bring their kids here. That's not sustainable. It would undermine national security and public safety. It would eradicate the American dream. And then she talks about, well, we want 10-10 an hour so that we have wage equality. 10-10 an hour. Now, as a Democrat, I agree with a minimum wage. I know I have Republican friends and conservative friends who disagree. And by the way, in America, we're supposed to disagree. That's how you celebrate being American, by having thoughtful, respectful debates and discussions. I was going to teach debate on the college level when the opportunity to become a federal agent arose in my horizon. Debate is very important, which is why these safe areas on college campuses scare the hell out of me. That's anti-American. That's not liberal. That's fascist. That's totalitarian. Shut down the arguments of the other side so you don't have to confront the shortcomings in your arguments. That's what this is about. But if you listen to Hillary, we're going to give you wage equality at 10-10 an hour. That's $21,008 per year. How the hell do you live on $21,000 a year? And you call that wage equality? And most people aren't thinking. They hear wage equality and they hear 10-10 an hour and they are off to the races and they are ecstatic. They are applauding and they're cheering and they're rolling in the aisles. 10-10 an hour. That is not the American dream. That is not what this is supposed to be about. And Donald Trump understands that. He's come out very clearly and said, look, if you get rid of the foreign workers, and this isn't a new idea. Eisenhower did it. FDR did it. Franklin Delano Roosevelt did it during the Depression. If you don't have enough jobs for your own people, you get rid of the foreign workers. This isn't rocket science. Europe used to do this all the time. In fact, in Europe, they didn't even want to make people citizens because if you weren't born in that country, the attitude was we should be able to move you out if we have an economic downturn. Countries are supposed to exist for the betterment of their citizens. We the people. We the people. That's all Americans. It's not about a race. And when people say, oh, Hillary's done played this race card. Well, if you want to enforce the immigration laws, you're a hate monger. No, you're not. As an immigration agent, I have arrested aliens from just about every country you could imagine across the planet. I spent years where I didn't interrogate, let alone arrest, a single Spanish-speaking alien. I've arrested aliens from Europe, from the Middle East, from Asia, from Africa, from Canada, from Israel, from New Zealand, from Japan. In fact, I got an award from the Japanese government for helping them by locating a woman who was part of a large cocaine smuggling operation. She was here in New York City. This isn't about Mexico or Mexicans or Latinos. And then we hear the lie about the Latino voter. And that's astonishing. That's astonishing. This is a disgusting form of prejudice, racism, and profiling. In law enforcement, we frequently profiled. Yes, we did. And it was done properly, and the courts have upheld the right and, in fact, the need for law enforcement to do it. Now, the way that we profiled took many factors into account. If you saw some young guy, for argument's sake, and there's all different sorts of scenarios, but let's just pick one scenario. A young man driving in a neighborhood where he is not of the same ethnicity as the majority of the residents. He's there late at night, fancy car, out-of-town plates, and he's on a block where we know there's been lots of drug activity. And there's plenty of parking spaces, but instead of parking, he keeps circling the block and circling the block and circling the block. And you say to yourself, what is this guy doing? It's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's plenty of parking. Who's he looking for? He doesn't fit in. We need to talk to him. We pull him over. You're civil. You're reasonable in your approach with the guy. And you say to him, okay, who are you looking for? Why are you here? Let me see your license and registration. And the reason we did it was because there was a very good possibility he was there looking for his drug connection. And time after time, we would find they were looking for the drug connection. Were we profiling? Sure we were. But we didn't just look at this guy and say, oh, he's a white guy, or he's Asian looking, or he's Latino looking, or he's a black guy. We looked at the totality of circumstances and behavior. But when journalists and pollsters and politicians, the deadly P's as I call them, the triple P, pollsters, politicians, and pundits, when they're out there doing their thing and they talk about the Latino voter, all they're saying is, if your last name is Garcia, Rodriguez, or Martinez, just knowing your name is all we need to know what you're about. If they talk about black voters and they're saying, well, if you have black skin, you've seen one black, you've seen them all. Jewish voters, oh, yeah, you've seen one Jew, you've seen them all. That's what they're saying. And no one challenges them on this. You know, I was in Indianapolis 2 weeks ago. I was asked to testify before the state Senate. Senator Mike Delf is the chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee in Indianapolis because they're looking at the problems they're having because of immigration. And I made the point that every American basically wants the same thing from government. And I don't care what your race, your religion, your ethnicity, your gender. I don't even care what your political orientation is, because basically we all want the same things. We want our military to keep our enemy as far from our shores as possible. It's actually a kind of border security, but at a distance. They want to make sure that the borders prevent the entry of terrorists, criminals, and narcotics. They want to make certain that law enforcement is effective to minimize crime and keep the streets as safe as possible. They want the schools to provide children with a quality education and the opportunity that when people are well-educated and willing to work hard, that anybody in America, irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity, can write the next American success story. And we want a double helping for our kids and their kids. That's what every American wants. And this notion that Latinos want open borders so drugs and gangs can flow into America is insane. Is insane. And the most likely victims of the violence perpetrated by foreign gangs in this country are the people they live with within those ethnic immigrant communities. And by the way, it's not just the Latino community. It's the Russian mob. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Jamaican drug posses. It's the European criminals. It's Middle Eastern gangs. I know this for a fact because for years I investigated and arrested these bums. And the people who paid the heaviest price, the people who tended most likely to suffer the violence and the extortion were the members of the ethnic immigrant communities. And when you look at the article that I wrote for CapsWeb.org, Globalism and the Death of the American Dream, the whole gist of that article, and I'd love for you folks out there to go capsweb.org and check out that article, or go to my website, michaelcutler.net. The whole point was that between automation and bringing in foreign workers and exporting American jobs, American workers don't have a chance. The top 1%ers, Gates and Zuckerberg and Bloomberg and all these other economic thugs, which is what I call them, have never made more money. And they've never been more secure knowing that no matter what happens, they'll have their wealth. But everyone else is in deep trouble. That economic escalator that Americans are trying to go up is moving down. And Americans are running faster, but the escalator is moving down at a faster speed than the Americans can run up. Wages are in decline. Job opportunities are dwindling. Job security is a thing of the past. This isn't the America that we saw just a couple of decades ago. What changed? Globalism. The idea that companies no longer say a pledge of allegiance to the American flag, but they say a pledge of allegiance to the bottom line. They move their companies overseas so they don't have to pay taxes. They bring in foreign workers to work in America, ordering their American workers to train their replacements if they want their severance packages, and then they build their factories overseas. And if you listen to Donald Trump's speech, he hit on all those issues. All those issues. And the very next day, he was accused of being radical, of being extreme, of pandering to the extreme right-wing nut jobs of the Republican Party. Extreme right nut jobs. I thought the Democratic Party was the party of working Americans. My dad was a construction worker. He died of lung cancer when I was a kid, in part because he worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War. My dad will always be my biggest hero. He was a Democrat because in those days the Democratic Party looked out for blue-collar America. Today the Democratic Party is knifing blue-collar workers in the back and knifing high-tech workers in the back. This isn't left or right. This is right or wrong. And so Donald Trump pops up, and yes, warts and all, but to me there's no contest, because what Hillary is offering us is the complete annihilation of America and the American dream. Notion of giving lawful status to millions of people with no capacity to determine who they really are, it flies in the face of the 9/11 Commission. It flies in the face of common sense. It would flood America with so many workers that wages would literally go down the sewer. This is not the America that anybody wants to live in, but it's the America that she and her partner Tim Kaine and her party are promising to give us. That's a hell of a promise. So that's where I stand on these issues. I hope I make sense to all of you out there. The United States is in the middle of a crisis. We need to be concerned of the prospect of terrorists coming to America. And we need to be, as Americans, united in standing up for America. I mean, that's really, at the end of the day, what it's about. I appreciate the caller, Ed, who called in with his excellent question. I hope all of you have a wonderful Labor Day weekend coming up. And please, folks, get involved. You know, I always like to remind people at the end of my programs that democracy is not a spectator sport. We need to get involved. We need to vote. We need to have the conversations with our friends and neighbors. We need to share our thoughts, our ideas. And that's what the American dream is about. Americans expressing their freedoms through freedom of speech and doing their homework. Join me again next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour, and please remember to go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks, The Social Contract will be coming out with the fall edition. I hope you look for it, and I hope you'll be here again on the Michael Cutler Hour next Friday. Good night, everybody.